TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. It's hockey. All hockey. Hockey all the time. But not this time. Live from the Gold Eyes Annual Open House at Shaw Park, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Your chance to watch the fish warm up for the 2012 season and talk a little hockey with the Illegal Curve crew. Now from the concourse at Shaw Park, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra on TSN 1290.
Good afternoon. Well, it's actually not Drew, Richard, and Ezra. It's Ezra, Michael, and Dave. Drew and Richard are currently in Toronto, so, you know, we'll have to do without those guys. But we are here live from Shaw Park for the annual Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. I'm your host today. A little bit of a change up. I'm usually in the spot beside Drew and to the right of Richard, but we're going to have a great show today. We're going to be talking about a little bit of hockey. There's a little bit of hockey going on, little first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But obviously we're here at the annual open house, so we're going to talk Gold Eyes. We're going to have the voice of the Gold Eyes on TSN 1290, Paul Edmonds. He's going to join us hopefully shortly and throughout the show. We've got three guests here today, this afternoon. We've got Sean Simpson, who's going to come on. The Ottawa Senators lost last night to the Montreal Canadiens. That series is at 1-1 and is turning out to be one of the best series probably since last year's first round. And then after that, we also have Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, who's going to come on. He's going to talk Toronto Maple Leafs. And then in the last hour, we're going to have Randy Hahn of CSN Bay Area to talk San Jose Sharks. Guys, very surprising development in Vancouver. San Jose taking the first two games. Not a lot of people were expecting that, but we're in a situation where the Canucks are on the verge of possibly even getting swept. So we're going to have Randy Hahn of CSN Bay Area on. So before we have Paul Edmonds on, voice of the Gold Eyes, I want to welcome my two analysts who are filling in for me and Richard. Michael Remus to my left. Dave Manouk, how's it going, boys? Are you ready to go here?
We are ready to go. It is a beautiful day in Winnipeg. The weather is a little crisp, but you know what? It's time for some baseball.
People Michael, I know Dave. Michael's already had two hot dogs, so I'm not sure if Remus has got anything left in the tank. But Remus, are you ready to talk hockey and a little bit of baseball?
Well, you know that I love baseball. I love the Gold Eyes, and the great thing about the open house is everyone who comes in gets a free soda and a drink. There's free popcorn. The sun's shining on the seats. Gold Eyes are practicing. I'm ready for baseball, but I'm also ready to talk hockey.
That's right. The first 1,500 fans here today at Shaw Park are going to get a free pop and a free hot dog. Come down. Started off this morning at 10 o'clock. It's going till 2. We are, of course, on air till 3 p.m. And right now we're going to bring in the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, Paul Edmonds.
Gentlemen.
Paul, we did this. How's it going?
Good. I'm really good.
We did
pumped.
Pumped, we're all pumped. Remus is so pumped he's already used his free hot dog coupon.
I've been asking Ezzy. I'm trying to get his.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you really got to kind of figure out a way where if you have a larger appetite, and most of us do, how do you get that second and third hot dog?
Exactly.
If they're only giving one away, right? So, you know, maybe bring a friend that's a vegetarian.
Exactly.
Right? That's the best thing to do.
Like Chris Brook. Absolutely. You can be a vegetarian and be proud here at Shaw Park. Paul, obviously the Gold Eyes won the American Association Championship last year. This is the 20th anniversary season. First and foremost, how are we ever going to be able to top last year?
I guess good question. The one thing that I look at here is there's an opportunity, and these guys on the field don't really know the history, but I think for Winnipeg and Manitoba sports fans, there's an opportunity for a repeat here. And that hasn't been done since 77, 78, 78, 79, when the Jets went back-to-back and won Avco Cups before entering the NHL for the first time. So there's an opportunity to make some history here after decades of not having that opportunity. Now, there have been opportunities with the football club since then. There's been an opportunity with the Gold Eyes back in 94 to 95, and they did get to the finals that year, did the Gold Eyes, and lost to St. Paul. So I think that's one of the things historically we can look at. But the other thing is, if they're able to do it this year, they're going to do it with only 7 guys that have ever worn a Gold Eye uniform from before. That's 3 pitchers and 4 position players. And one of those position players was Phelan Lentini, who I'm including in there as a returning Gold Eye, but he wasn't part of the 2012 championship team. So there's a lot of things that are at stake. And if Rick is able to do it along with Tom Vaith and the rest of the organization, they'll do it virtually with a brand new team.
I want to get into the lineup a little bit later, but first and foremost, for people who haven't ever come to an annual open house, we were here last year. We did the show, and it was, I think, 10 degrees warmer than it was this year, even though we're not complaining because it's still plus 10 Celsius, so we're good to go. But for people who haven't come down, we're open here till 2. What should people expect here at Shaw Park if you're thinking of you're in your car right now and you've never come down?
Well, there's the freebie element for sure, but there's also the sunshine is out today. You can kind of get in and sit in a seat and enjoy some green grass. And the best part of it is they changed this up a couple of years ago. This is the opening day of training camp. So you're actually getting to see the 26 players, 23 of which will make up the start of the season on the opening day roster, on the field working out. If you're a baseball fan, casual or otherwise, you get to see some of the early spring training drills that they do that you would see if you went down to Phoenix or to Florida, depending on your major league team or where you like to go or holiday in the winter for sure. It's pitchers fielding practice. Frankly, Ezzy, a lot of it's kind of boring, but it is interesting to see what they do to kind of start the season. And I know today, and I got a bit of a scoop, but Rick went into the clubhouse and told the pitchers they were going through PFP, pitchers fielding practice, and you should have saw the eyes roll like, oh, for the 100th time in my career, I've got to do this again. But they need to do it because they need to know where to go and get the mindset of going to first base and a bunt or a little tapper. So there's some things here that you're going to see that are kind of interesting to the whole makeup of how you go along to develop your team in the short period of time that you do have before you get to the real season.
Well, I mean, for us, I mean, we're all baseball fans here, obviously, but I think you mentioned it's boring. I don't think so at all. I mean, we were here last year, and I think what I think is the most unique about this is you walk right in, you've got the Gold Eyes general manager, Andrew Collier, walking around, you've got yourself walking around, you can meet everybody.
Right.
You can get your tickets today, individual tickets
right
on sale today at 10 o'clock in the morning. So if you're thinking about getting a mini pack, or maybe even if you want to get season tickets, you can come down. But what I like the best about this is that really you're getting an experience that sets the tone for the entire season, and you're able to see the players that you're going to cheer for every year, and you get to interact with everyone. So I think it's worth it to come down today. And also, if there's any hot dogs left, you can maybe get a couple hot dogs.
You need a job? You did a better job than me. I mean, I think what you're saying is accessibility for sure. That's number one. The other part of the ticket component is if you're on the fence and you're looking at maybe buying some sort of a full-time package, whether that's a season ticket or a mini package, you can actually come here and decide kind of where you want to sit. And it's a real good day to do that, as opposed to looking on the computer or telling some guy or having some guy tell you on the phone where you might want to sit.
Absolutely. And there isn't a drive to 13,000, so you're going to get some seats, even though the Gold Eyes have very good attendance year after year. You're going to get a chance to get tickets and pick them out.
So, Paul, what kind of team can fans expect to see this season?
Well, I think, Dave, in a lot of respects, this goes back a couple of years, and the 2010 season was a huge disappointment. And there was some guys on the team that weren't very athletic. There was some guys on the team that weren't good teammates. And I think that Rick Forney and Tom Vaith decided at that point that they needed to kind of change the way that they went out and recruited players. Number one, they wanted athletes that could play a multitude of positions. Number two, they wanted good guys. And they went out and got that. And the championship was starting to be built from 2011 through to 2012. And they did that. They got more athletic in 2011, and they got better in terms of clubhouse guys. And that just resulted as a carryover to 2012 and what they were able to do. So when you only have seven guys that have worn Gold Eyes uniforms from before of the 26 that are here, you've got a lot of players that are brand new. But I can assure you of this. Rick and Tom have done their homework on these guys, so they are A, good guys, and B, if you look at resume, they'll be very athletic, multitude of positions. I was just going through it upstairs. There's probably a handful or more of guys that can not only play the infield but can play the outfield as well, or vice versa. So you have interchangeable parts on a shorter roster, but first and foremost, they got way more athletic, and they made sure that they got good guys both in the clubhouse, on the bus, on the field, and certainly away from the field as well.
You know, Paul, one thing that hasn't changed with the Gold Eyes is manager Rick Forney. He's been with the team since 2005, going on 8 years. How important is it for the Gold Eyes to have that stable management?
There's been three guys in the history of the Gold Eyes that have managed the team, and this is the 20th year. And And Doug Simonic was the first 2 years. We know about his history and his resume. I mean, all he does is won it at the independent levels. I mean, very respected going into another season in Fargo this year. Then there was Hal Lanier, a former big league manager. He was here for a decade. And then Rick Forney, who was Hal's understudy as a pitcher for him and then a pitching coach for him. And now he just kind of rolled into the job of being the manager. So very consistent that way. Not a lot of turnover. Rick understands what it takes to win at this level, what it takes to work to build a team at this level. And as Rick will tell you, and I firmly believe this, it's a difficult job. You are, in a lot of respects, kind of like an NCAA football coach, baseball coach, NCAA for that matter. You're not only out recruiting, but then you are actually managing or coaching the team that you went out and recruited. So it's a lot of work. We look at it for 4 months or 4.5 months as it went last year, but it's really a full-time job as it's really spawned into what Rick has done over the last several off seasons as kind of 8 to 9 to 10 months of really banging the phones, and then the rewarding part is what we see here today.
Paul, we talked about the seven. There's only seven returning players out of the 26 Goldeyes that will eventually fill up the starting roster. As far as new Goldeyes, for those who aren't familiar with the team right now, you talked about it on Inside Pitch, which was on the same night we had our Illegal Curve show. But as far as the new guys that are in the lineup this year, you've got a new pitcher that was acquired, Edgar Asuna, yep, and another, Justin Garcia. What should we expect about those guys, and are those two guys maybe going to fill the roles that some of the departing pitchers that left were filling?
Yeah, excellent question, because yep, both of those gentlemen will be in the starting rotation. So, you know, you've lost Chris Salameda. You've lost Ace Walker. That's 200-plus innings that you're going to have to replace. Those two guys are penciled in behind Matt Rush to be 2-3 or 3-2, whichever way you want to look at it. So those are important pieces to the puzzle here. You know, there's other guys like Tim Smith, you know, big Canadian kid. We've got our Canadian quotient filled here already. There's a number of guys that are either living in Winnipeg or are Canadian by birth. So this is kind of exciting this year as well, because as Rick has said, he's always wanted Canadians on the team. It's just the best ones are always in affiliated baseball. Well, they've got a few guys that aren't this year, Tim Smith being one, and a big left-handed power bat. We'll see what he does. But I think part of it is seeing some of these new faces and where they're going to fill in and where they fill in on the depth chart and how they're going to produce this year.
So we're talking Goldeyes here again. If you're just joining us, we're live from Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Goldeyes Open House. We're joined by Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, on TSN 1290. We're talking baseball, but will you come back on the show?
I will.
Throughout the day, and we'll talk some hockey, because we did that last year. We're going to have Sean Simpson of Team 1200 Radio in Ottawa on next to talk about the Ottawa Senators Montreal Canadiens
series. Good series.
So we'll talk hockey, and we'll join you. And if you're driving around and you're not sure what the time is, the Goldeyes Open House is open till 2. So we'll take a break, and we'll be right back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to Shaw Park. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Michael Remus and David Minuk, Richard Pollock and Drew Mandel, your usual two putzes that are on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show are in Toronto, so they can't join us. Winnipeg Goldeyes Open House started at 10 a.m. today. It goes till 2 o'clock p.m. If you're in the downtown area, or even if you're not in the downtown area, come on down. The Winnipeg Goldeyes are practicing on the field right now. There's going to be some hitting practice. There's going to be a little bit of pitching. So come on down. First 1,500 people are going to get a hot dog and a drink. Michael Remus, of course, has already had his quotient of hot dogs. But we've got a great show. We're going to talk hockey. We're talking baseball with Paul Edmonds. Paul Edmonds is going to join us throughout the show. And now we're going to switch to the first round of the playoffs. We're going to start off talking now about the Ottawa Senators and Montreal Canadiens series. And we've got Sean Simpson of Team 1200. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Sean Simpson, co-host of the Drive 1200 in Ottawa. How are you doing? Sean, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, boys. Great day here in Ottawa. The middle of the playoffs, some beautiful weather, just about to hit the golf course, so life is good.
Awesome. Yeah, it's not bad here in Winnipeg either. It's 10 degrees. We're here at Shaw Park. It's beautiful out. We got baseball behind us, so we're not complaining either. Sean, we have to start off right now with Thursday's game. And before we get into last night's game, we have to ask you about Eric Greiba's hit on Lars Eller. First and foremost, did you think that the two-game suspension given to Eric Greiba for his hit on Lars Eller was fair.
Again, I don't know about fair. I didn't even think there should be a penalty on the play. You know, you have a sucker pass up the middle, the guy's got his head down, he gets clocked. That's hockey. Never want to see somebody get hurt, and you take away the blood. The Subban hit on Neil had more intent injury than Greib ended up. So, I don't think it needed a suspension. Like I said, I don't even think it should have been a penalty on the play.
Sean, the question is, what impact do you think that the Greib suspension and then the subsequent comments by Brandon Prust towards Paul McLean, did that have any impact on the game?
I don't know if it did. To be honest with you, I thought Greib struggled in game one, and they ended up putting Ben Lyon. I thought they'd end up dressing Weirkosh. So from a competitive standpoint, I don't think it matters. I thought Prust's comments were pretty classless, and I'm not taking an Ottawa-Montreal side here. I'm sincerely a neutral media person, but the whole tact of Therrien after that game was a lack of class that Paul McLean supposedly was showing. And for Brandon Prust, whoever he thinks he might be, to come out and call out a guy that's been an absolute class act, as you guys know in Winnipeg, as a hockey player, a person, as a coach, I would have been demanding something of an apology if I was Michelle Therrien and wanted to run a class act instead of giving him an assistant captain last night. Hey, and I like Brandon Prust as a hockey player. He could be on my team any day, but that whole situation was, to me, they just seem to be talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Jason Spezza got hurt for the Senators early on in the year. He's been out for most of the season. How different do you think this series would be if he was in the lineup?
Well, again, you have to look at injuries, and Montreal's got their own issues, not only with Eller, of course, Gionta and Pacioretty being out. Everybody's gone through this year, but no doubt about it, their center ice. Kyle Turris, for the last couple of months, has hit a wall where he's struggled. You end up with Zibanejad, who's 20 years old. You bring in up Pageau, and all of a sudden Zach Smith. So his size in the middle of a Daniel Alfredson and McCullough has had the knee injury, it would be huge. I mean, this guy was the fourth leading scorer in the National Hockey League last year. He's very good on faceoffs, which is an area they struggled, and he's also very good on the power play. So you've taken one of the premier centermen out of a center ice that right now is on the smallish and inexperienced side, so it would be a huge addition.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live from Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house. We're joined on the line by Sean Simpson, co-host of The Drive on Team 1200 in Ottawa. Sean, we have to ask you about Craig Anderson. He made 48 saves in the first game on Thursday night, and he had another good game yesterday, even though the Ottawa Senators lost. How good do you think he is actually playing right now? Because you could argue he stole game one, or is this something that we should have expected from Craig Anderson the way he finished the regular season?
Well, if you look back to Craig's play, I mean, his play before the ankle injury, he was on track to become MVP of the league in my mind, win the Vezina Trophy. He was playing that good. Returning from the ankle injury, he's played well. I don't think he's had the same mobility, the same efficiency. But no, in game one, he was outstanding. I thought they should have just come back in a back-to-back and played Robin Leonard last night, take your chances with house money, and then play Anderson on Sunday. They didn't. But Craig, since the day he's arrived in Ottawa, has given them stability and consistency. And outside of the hand injury last year and now the ankle this year, when he's been in there, you know what you're going to get, which is always good goaltending. And he's also shown the ability to elevate like he did in game one and give you great goaltending.
So, Sean, Montreal has had a clear advantage over Ottawa in the faceoff circle over the first couple of games. How concerned should Paul McLean be about heading back to Ottawa?
Oh, you have to be. That's been a struggle for the Ottawa Senators. When you looked at the lineup coming in, they didn't dress Jeff Halpern in game one. So really on the surface, Montreal wasn't a team that was great on the draws either. So now you've matched up two clubs that way. You put Halpern back in with the injuries yesterday. And it's tough. I mean, especially in last night's game, guys, in a back-to-back in a shortened season, and you go up and down the list with the Carlsons and the Cowans and the McCollums. You've got guys that have come back from injury. Daniel Alfredson, 40 years old. You know, it's tough, and you knew that was going to be tough. And if you're chasing the puck all the time, particularly on the power play, you know, puck possession is such a big deal. And so, no, you have to be, and you try to find ways to make an adjustment. And at this point, unfortunately, I don't think the Sens have any answer for that.
Talk about Erik Karlsson, who had that miraculous comeback from the ankle injury at the end of the regular season, had a great game one, wasn't nearly as effective in game two. What do you see for him going forward?
Oh, he'll be fine, but, you know, he doesn't have the pace, guys, right now that he had before the injury, and you're just blessed and thank God that he's back and that his career is resumed, but he doesn't have the same jump when he's rested. In a back-to-back situation, you had to expect that. I mean, he's come in logged minutes. What's been so impressive about this is that without kind of that incredible athletic ability, see the hockey smarts of a guy that's not overly big take over, that's what I thought has been really remarkable. Is he's come back and he's logged heavy minutes, has still been a very efficient player. Not quite as dynamic as the past, but he certainly makes the Ottawa Senators a better hockey team.
Sean, Montreal and Ottawa are going to meet in Ottawa for Game 3 on Sunday. Series is tied 1-1, which you'd have to agree is not bad for the Ottawa Senators. They have home ice advantage back. What one player on the Ottawa Senators is going to have to take over the series in order to overcome the Montreal Canadiens? Is it going to be Daniel Alfredson? Is it maybe Erik Karlsson? Who's going to have to give a Ryan Kessler-like performance for the Ottawa Senators? Sean, are you there? Nope. I might have lost Sean. I guess that question was too good for Sean Simpson. We might have lost him. He did say that he was going golfing later today.
I think I just heard him yell four.
Yeah, so he might have
decided
to tee off. But we've got Game 3 coming up, guys, for the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens in Ottawa on Sunday. And really, to me, this has become one of the best series. I think the Vancouver-San Jose series is pretty intriguing because you've got the whole Roberto Luongo storyline, and you've got the Vancouver Canucks who are really trying to prove that they can come back from last year's first-round exit. But I think this series with the Eric Greiba hit on is really on Lars Eller has really made this one of the most important series.
He's back.
Sean, do we have you back on the line there?
I'm back.
We thought you might have gone to your tea time early.
No, I got plenty of time still. So at least time to hit a few balls. First round of the season, so I'm not taking it too serious, guys. I'm just going to enjoy the
okay.
weather.
Sean, before we lost you there, I was going to ask you about who on the Ottawa Senators do you feel is really going to have to put this team on their back in order to win this series?
Well, again, you look at Erik Karlsson to some extent, but the whole year when they've really needed someone to rise up, it's been Daniel Alfredson. And Daniel's been pretty sluggish in the first two games here. At the same time, he's being centered by Kyle Turris, who struggled, by McCullough, who's coming off some serious knee injuries. So, I think the tone tomorrow night, this is an opportunity. Even the game yesterday, I didn't think Ottawa played great, but in the second period, it was 2-1. They were putting on pressure. That was Montreal's game. They had to win. Price made a huge save on Gonchar. You come home, like you say, you split it. Now you've got the home ice. And tomorrow, to me, it's a bit of a statement game for the Ottawa Senators. This is a chance, I think, to really send a message to the Montreal Canadiens. And I just expect Daniel Alfredson once again to be that guy.
Sean, with the with only 24 hours between games, which, you know, especially in the playoffs, seems like it's never going to be enough time. Have we seen a new rivalry really take hold with this Montreal-Ottawa battle?
Oh, you better believe it. And that Sunday when I was watching the game against Boston, and all of a sudden Pageau scored, my arm went up. I was excited. And if they played Pittsburgh or they played Boston, it would be fine. But I knew that the chance to play Montreal and being close. And I grew up a Montreal Canadiens fan, and I'm from Ottawa, and I enjoy when the Senators do well. We're going into the interdivisional play next year. I mean, this sets up absolutely perfect. And I also knew Michel Therrien based on his past, and a very good coach, very respectful, but also very emotional. And there's no doubt about it. This rivalry, it's game on. I mean, it's official, it's real, and everyone around here is even more hyped up based on what's happened.
Sean, this is Mika Zibanejad and Jacob Silverberg's first playoff series of the Stanley Cup playoffs. How are they doing, in their role? Because right now they're playing on the second line. They're getting big-time minutes. How would you rate their play so far?
Well, I think they've acquitted themselves very well. And I'm not a big fan of Guillaume Lafondreux playing on their line, so I think you have to almost carry a guy that doesn't skate very well. And Mika's has gotten better and better. Silverberg's one of those first-year players where he hits the wall a little bit. What he needs is strength and probably another summer under his belt. But you know what? No doubt both of these guys are going to do well. I really expect Silverberg to come back next year and emerge and be probably a 30-goal scorer. I think he's that talented. He plays the game properly, like most Swedes, but both of these guys are really tracking his advantage. It started off with a tough at the beginning of the year. He had concussion issues, some issues with conditioning, just issues as far as some motivation. And he's come back in after time in Binghamton and come into Ottawa and has really matured for a 20-year-old.
Sean, we've got one final question for you. Give us your keys to this series. How do the Ottawa Senators win this series? And do you think the Ottawa Senators ultimately are going to end up winning the series over the Montreal Canadiens?
I say it's 50-50. I think a lot depends on Game 3. My gut still tells me Ottawa has enough. They've got to get their power play to be better. On the back end, you've got Gonchar and Karlsson who do a nice job. But the Turris, McCullough, Alfredson combination yesterday just had no rotation, no creativity. So they've got to figure out some way to complement Karlsson and Gonchar, in my mind, who still move it around very well, still quarterback the power play, maybe one of the better in the league as far as combinations. So if they can find that mix and continue to get to Carey Price, they'll be fine.
Sean, thank you very much for joining us. Sean Simpson, co-host of the show on Team 12. Sorry, pardon me, The Drive. I apologize. On Team 1200. Thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy your golf round today.
All right, boys. Have a great day. Cheers.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from Shaw Park. This is TSN 1290. Welcome back. Remus is getting into the music. Welcome back to Shaw Park. This is the Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. This is also the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Michael Remus and Dave Minuk, filling in for Richard Pollock and Drew Mandel, who are luckily in Toronto. I hear it's very nice there, but it's also very nice here. The Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House goes till 2 o'clock p.m. today. We'll be live on air till 3, but if you're around downtown Winnipeg, come on down. The Winnipeg Gold Eyes are practicing right now. It's beautiful. The sun is shining, so come down to Shaw Park right now and enjoy the Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. I'd like to thank Sean Simpson of Team 1200 for joining us, talking Ottawa Senators and Montreal Canadiens. Guys, now we're going to start going series by series. We're going to start with the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens. Montreal Canadiens won yesterday 3-1, took Game 2. Series is all tied up now. We're going to be going back to Ottawa for Game 3 with the series tied at 1. Carey Price made 29 saves yesterday. I don't know about you guys, but probably the most amazing thing about yesterday's win for the Montreal Canadiens, in addition to the fact they were without Lars Eller, was the fact they were out without Captain Brian Gionta. They were out without Max Pacioretty, and they still got the job done, won the game. What did you guys think about Game 2, and what's your overall take on the series? Dave, I'll start with you.
I was surprised. I thought that Ottawa had the momentum. I was expecting a little bit better of an effort from the Senators. Sean had some really interesting points in terms of the sluggishness of some of the key players and how they didn't have the jump that they needed to have in the game. You know, it's tough, though. I mean, scheduling a playoff game within 24, like a back-to-back 24 hours, is in lunacy in my mind. I mean, it's great in the sense that look at everything that happened. We had all the drama from the Griba, incident. So you had that, and then you also had like the Ottawa Sun. If you didn't see it, the Ottawa Sun had a picture of him lying on the ice. And I believe, what was the caption? Senators draw first blood.
Oof.
And it was. I thought it was in pretty poor taste. And a lot of people, like, it got kind of the social media aspect of people talking about this series. And really, I mean, it created bad blood, you know, to keep on that blood theme. Because realistically, you know, everybody, you've got, you know, if you don't have that cooling down phase. It's not like they're saying, okay, that happened. Now we've got a day to, you know, kind of let it germinate. And then we have a game the next day. No, you have to, like, think about that. It's festering on your brain. And then, boom. You know, you have this thing. And then, you know, you got Brandon Press comments. It's just, the whole thing was, it was amazing to watch. And then, again, I mean, I watched the game with Ez. It was crazy. It really was. Like, it was just unbelievable.
Reem, a lot of people forget this, but Ottawa and Montreal, it's only about an hour and a half, two-hour drive. It's very close, and you have a lot of fans on both sides of the provincial border that are Habs fans, and you've got Ottawa Senators fans in Southern Ontario. But is this actually turning out to be a better rivalry than what everyone was wanting to see, that being the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think any time that you have two Canadian teams in close proximity playing each other, there's going to be some rivalry. I remember when Edmonton came, or when the Jets went to Calgary last year, there is some of that hate that, you want to beat the Canadian team in your team. But I think what happened here is that Griba hit sent the series on a rocket into, like, one of the best series ever. I mean, it reminds me of the intensity of the Pittsburgh-Philly series last year. But I think the interesting thing from going from Game 2 to Game 1 is Carey Price's play for the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, there was a lot of questions about Carey Price towards the end of the season about his inconsistent play. I mean, he had three not-so-good games. Another starting Peter Budaj. And we talked with Mo Khan yesterday on the warm-up with Hussler. He said they got calls until 2 or 3 a.m. saying that they should be starting Budaj over Price. But what happened yesterday is Carey Price steps up along with the rest of the Canadiens, and that's what Michel Therrien has done. He's rallied this team together, and they were able to get a split at home, which is what they wanted.
Reem, I think you make a good point there about Carey Price. I love the fact that he lost those teeth, and then those teeth came out of his mouth. He just gave it to the trainer, went right back on the ice. It was as if, you know, oh, I lost a few teeth. Okay, I'm going to go back out there. That was, to me, what hockey's all about.
Playoff hockey right there. I mean, they should be putting that in a commercial.
Absolutely. That little sequence should just be a commercial. But I want to talk to you guys a little bit about Erik Karlsson. We talked to Sean Simpson about Erik Karlsson. Let's be honest. A lot of people didn't think, I think the team didn't think that Erik Karlsson was even going to come back. Yesterday he makes an egregious mistake.
Yeah.
He coughs up the puck
to, White.
To Ryan White,
yeah.
A good Brandon Manitoba boy, by the way. Ryan White takes the puck, scores. They scored two goals in the span of, I think it was 54 seconds here yesterday. And that kind of changed the tide of the game. Obviously, the Montreal Canadiens killed off those penalties.
Yeah.
The Ottawa Senators weren't successful on the power play yesterday, a power play that's actually pretty good. But Erik Karlsson, do you think they have they being the Montreal Canadiens, have decided to focus in on Erik Karlsson, get him a little bit off of his game? Because it seemed like he was a little bit rattled yesterday and early on.
Yeah, you know, he didn't seem the same. I agree with you, Ez. And that play was, like, extremely important, critical in the game. It really had a huge impact because he's not the type of player who makes those kind of mistakes. You don't think about that when you think of Erik Karlsson making. I mean, and he's still young. You know, he's not like we're not talking about a guy who's been in the league for 15 years. You know, so he can still be prone to making rookie errors. But I just was surprised because, you know, you don't expect it. I mean, let's be realistic. When he had that injury, you know, and Eugene Melnyk brought out his forensic scientist. But like when he had that injury, we were talking about like next season for Erik Karlsson, and we were talking about like maybe he wouldn't even be playing till sometime in the middle of next season.
A situation that's a little bit serious to Zach Redmond. You know, it's a guy that we didn't expect to see playing,
right.
And he almost played again for the Jets. Played a little bit for the Ice Caps.
Yeah, and it's similar in the sense that you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself like these guys are not going to be able to play. These guys are not going to be able to play like to that level. And then amazingly, not only does he come back, look at the minutes he's playing. He's playing huge minutes.
He started off with 20, sorry to cut you off,
yeah.
Dave. He started off playing 27 minutes. And you're right, he comes back and he steps in. He's the number one defenseman. I think your points are well taken. And I think that a guy like Erik Karlsson, they've got veteran leadership on the Sens defense. They've got Gonchar and Phillips. Then you've got a guy like Patrick Wierkoch and Andre Benoit who've stepped up nicely and really established themselves as guys that can play in the NHL. I want to now switch a little bit, though, to Montreal. And Brendan Gallagher is a guy that everybody can't stop talking about. And I know that we were talking about him on the NHL Midweek Show on Wednesdays on TSN 1290, a guy that has got himself into the Calder Trophy discussion. He had 15 goals this year. He scored last night playing with Alex Galchenyuk on that third line. I mean, how big of a role are these two guys playing, especially considering that no Pacioretty, no Gionta, no Eller last night?
These guys are playing a tremendous role. Obviously, I mean, last year they were Canadians. They finished in the bottom of the East, but these guys have propelled them to, you know, the top of the standings. They give them some of that depth in the second and third lines. These guys have incredible speed. Gallagher has an amazing shot. And when you can, you know, we don't have to rely so much on the first and second lines, and you have these two youngsters stepping up, definitely helps you out in, you know, winning any series, but definitely is great for the long-term future of the Canadians.
And again, we were watching that game last night, Ez, and we saw that play set up when Gallagher scored, and it was like a beautiful pass. Remember that? Like, it was, you're sitting there going, it's amazing when you're watching these games sometimes, and you can actually sit there and you can go, you anticipate what is about to happen, and you're thinking to yourself, if that happens, it's going to be fantastic. And then when it actually does, when that becomes thought becomes reality, you're like, this is incredible. What a play. So those guys are really dynamic. They're stepping up. They're young players, but they're not acting like it's their first time at the rodeo.
When you talk about the Montreal Canadiens and going into the season, it wasn't clear if either Alex Galchenyuk or Brandon Gallagher would make the team. But now when you're talking about, you know, the playoffs and there's injuries, suspensions, whatever, and you're talking about which guys are going to step up, for the Ottawa Senators, it wasn't necessarily forwards, because going into the series, we talked about how this was going to be a low-scoring series. The Ottawa Senators don't score a lot of goals, and the Montreal Canadiens are a good defensive team. And then Ottawa comes into the first game, scores four goals. Yesterday, they are obviously were only able to score one goal. But when you talk about this series, it almost seems like Craig Anderson standing on his head. You've got the Senators who are playing pretty well, but if they don't get offense from their rookies, Mika Zibanejad, Jacob Silverberg, these are guys that are playing big-time minutes. They're on their second line. It's not like these guys are getting, you know, sheltered minutes on the third or fourth lines. So this situation to me has been fascinating because you have the Montreal Canadiens who played pretty well in Game 1 and they were able to respond and get the goaltending and get their special teams going. But Game 3 is coming up and we had Sean Simpson on and he was talking about how they need a guy like Erik Karlsson to play better. To me, I didn't think Erik Karlsson necessarily didn't play well. I think that he didn't play well in spurts because he is the most dominating player on the ice. But for you guys, I want to get your take on right now going forward, who you like in the series, not so much just based on Game 2, but going forward, what are your keys to this series?
My key to the series by far is Carey Price. If he can step up and play the way he should be playing, then there's no question that the Montreal Canadiens should win. I mean, the Senators for all... I mean, the Senators need to be applauded for what they've done. The fact that they've gotten to the playoffs, considering that everyone, once all the injuries happened, everyone thought this team was done. And not only have they stepped up, but they've excelled and they've played like a team, and they're playing an extremely good team game. End of the day, though, I think Montreal has more talent. I think Montreal is the better team. I think Montreal is a team that should win this series. I anticipate it going to at least six games, maybe even a seventh game. You never know.
Me too.
But, like, I really, my key, if you ask me one key to the series, I would say it would be the play of Carey Price.
And he really is the guy that I think was overlooked in the series a little bit. I think people like to translate and look at history and what happened lately. What have you done for me lately, right?
Right.
And Carey Price didn't finish the season strong, yet he was a Vezina candidate. And going into the series, everybody said, well, the Ottawa Senators can beat Carey Price, or if they can get to Carey Price, rather, I think they can win the series. And I think it was shown yesterday that Carey Price didn't steal the game, but he played very well, and they were able to come out with the win, when in reality, Craig Anderson stood on his head. Yesterday's game was probably closer than the score indicated. I think you guys would agree with that.
Yeah.
It was 3-1, but that game could have easily gone and become a four-goal game. The Montreal Canadiens really pulling out that win. Like you said, Dave, playing in kind of difficult circumstances. Everyone else had played two games already. They're playing games one and two back-to-back Thursday, Friday. They get Saturday off here, and they've got game three in Ottawa Sunday. But I think this series really, Reem, has turned into a fascinating series, because last night we were all expecting there to be more fireworks. And if you saw at the end of the game, Ryan White was going at it with the Ottawa Senators, Guillaume Latendresse, going at it and just hacking each other in front of the net as the game ended. I actually expected, I mean, there was a fight in the game, but I don't expect anything to be as pleasant, because Michel Therrien, and after the game, I thought it was brilliant, by the way, that Michel Therrien said, oh, if you've noticed who number 61 is, Rafael Diaz, saying that to Paul McLean.
Yeah.
I don't think Paul McLean really cares too much. But, Reem, do you think this game three is probably going to be a little bit more rougher?
I don't know, Ez. It's tough to tell. I mean, I said on the warm-up yesterday with Hustler that I thought, yeah, there'd be some rough stuff, maybe some scrums after the whistles in the first 10 minutes. But the bottom line is, this is a playoff hockey game. Both teams want to win. I mean, yeah, you have that bad blood, but there hasn't been much fighting in the playoffs the last few seasons. I mean, we saw Kyle Okposo fight yesterday in the Islanders game.
Yep.
But I think these teams are well coached. They're focused. I think they have, you know, they have a greater goal at hand. And I think that, yeah, this is a short-term thing, this feud after the Greiba hit on Lars Eller. But I think they're focused and ready to win and know what they got to do to take the series.
That's a good point. We might see a fight, but I definitely don't think they're going to go out of their way to drop the gloves. I think there's other ways of doing that, laying a big hit or what have you.
Well, one thing about the playoffs is it seems that after every whistle in the playoffs, there's a weather head. You see one guy come in and just stick his glove in someone else's face. Another guy comes from behind and, you know, sticks his arm around a guy's neck. I think you're going to see a lot of that little extracurricular stuff. But I don't think it's going to be anything excessively dirty any intense.
I expected to see that here right now. I thought we were going to be doing that to each other.
Yeah, maybe we should just break out in a little,
little scrums,
a little scuttlebutt here. I want to go to break. We're live from Shaw Park. This is the Winnipeg Gold Eyes annual open house, 20th anniversary of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. We've got batting practice behind us right now. Come on down. We're here till 3 p.m. Legal Curve is here on air till 3 p.m., but the Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house goes till 2. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and Boston Bruins. And then we're going to be joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post coming up at 1 to talk about that series. So let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from Shaw Park. This is TSN 1290. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from Shaw Park. We got a beautiful day here behind us, a beautiful little atmosphere here. We've got Winnipeg Gold Eyes taking batting practice. I kind of want to go down there, Reem, and, you know, pick up a Louisville Slugger and show them what I've got.
You think they'll let us stand in there? I wouldn't mind taking a few swings.
As long as you put a batting helmet on and you don't hit the pitcher in the head, I think they'll let you take batting practice. I am Ezra Ginsberg. I'm joined by Dave Minuk. I'm joined by Michael Remus. Colin Jensen is here with us. We've got Greg Liverpool, a big fan of Illegal Curve, who's joined us down here at Shaw Park. The Gold Eyes open house is going till 2 o'clock p.m., so if you're in the neighborhood, come on down. You can get a free hot dog. or a free drink if you're one of the first 1,500 people here. But come on down. You can check out the Winnipeg Gold Eyes right now taking batting practice. We're talking hockey. We're going to be joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post at 1 o'clock. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. We're going to talk to him about the Leafs and Bruins. They play tonight. The Leafs are down 1-0 in that series, guys. I want to talk about that series because the Toronto Maple Leafs were absolutely humbled in that first game against the Boston Bruins. They didn't have a lot going for them. It was 4-1. You had basically the Boston Bruins doing whatever they wanted. Patrice Bergeron was all over the ice. Tuukka Rask had a great game. James Reimer didn't have his best game. Dave, is there any way that... Is this all doom and gloom? Is it just inevitable that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to lose this series? Or do you see them fighting back and possibly making a series of this?
Okay, well, there's a number of questions there. I don't think they should be planning the parade just yet down in Toronto because the team definitely learned a lesson, despite the fact that they opened the scoring in game one and everyone was already, you know, saying that it's over. Who is this Toronto team? But Boston showed them that what Boston is. And the truth is, I think Boston did what many people thought they would do, is that they didn't really kill themselves over the final 10 games. They kind of laid low, and then when push comes to shove, you know, they showed that they are a playoff hockey team, and they're a team that knows how to win in the playoffs, and that's what this team is really geared towards. I mean, we know Richard's a big proponent of the Bruins. He thinks that, you know, this team has what it takes to go all the way to the conference finals at least. And you know what? You can see it because they are really, you know, that's the composition of this team. But now, you know, from a Toronto point of view, do I think that they can get back into the series? I do. I think that it's going to require some serious changes to their play, though, obviously. I mean, you're going to have James Reimer step up his game. He can't let in weak goals. I mean, he just can't do it. It's too
especially with the defense in front of him.
Absolutely. And there's just too much. It's just too much of a backbreaker in the playoffs. There's too much momentum swings. There are too many momentum swings to really allow a goal that just shouldn't be getting in at the NHL level. You know what I'm saying? So at that point, you know, it really falls on James Reimer, you know, good old Manitoba boy. But I really think if he can improve his game, and the truth is at the end of the day, he only scored one goal. Going to need some goal scoring. So, I mean, like, you have to really look at your forward lines and say, well, wake up, Kessel. I mean, and the truth is we know the way Chara is on Kessel. Chara owns Kessel, and it's in Kessel's head that Chara owns him. And it's just the reality.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, though. Sure. Phil Kessel was involved in that trade back in 2002 for the two first-round draft picks, turned into Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton. He didn't play yesterday, Dougie Hamilton, by the way. Wednesday night, I should say, didn't play. Wade Redden played, had a goal and assist. I want to talk about him. I want to throw that to Remus in a second. But on that topic, I mean, isn't this a situation where Game 2 of the first round, Toronto has not been in the playoffs for 9 years. Isn't this where Phil Kessel proves that he can overcome playing against one of the best defensemen? I mean, this is where he has to find a way to use his teammates. Isn't this really where we're going to find out more about Phil Kessel and how good of a hockey player he is? He's never been in this situation before where he's the guy that's dependent on for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, you know what? I hate to label or put the blame, I should say, on one player. Because, you know, as we hear every day at a Jets game, you know, the pre-thing, hockey is a team game. You can't put it all on one guy.
Right.
Having said that, there are certain expectations when you're a superstar on your team that you're going to elevate your game. We saw with Andrew Ladd here in Winnipeg, he elevated his game. He took the team on his back, and he elevated his game. Similarly, Phil Kessel, there's an expectation. You're making big money. You have to be able to stand up and say, look, yes, Chara's good. Yes, Chara plays me well. But I've got to figure out a way to to be able to beat Chara because that's who they're going to have on me every single time. That's just the reality. They're always going to have Chara because they know Chara plays Kessel well. So if you're Phil Kessel and if you're a professional, which he obviously is, you have to say, there's got to be a way for me to crack this mystery.
And, the interesting thing about Phil Kessel is that he's not a guy who speaks to the media too often. And before the playoffs began, he didn't even come out and address them before the series. I mean, that has to say something about how he feels about facing the Boston Bruins. I mean, look, it's not hard to go out and answer a few questions, give a few cliche answers that you always hear. But something's wrong with his head, and he's got to get it fixed.
I agree with you, Michael. Now, we should mention that it's expected that Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Randy Carlyle is going to reunite Joffrey Leupel, Phil Kessel, and Tyler Bozak, a line that was having success at the beginning of the year, and then Leupel went out with an injury, and then they brought up James Van Riemsdyk, and then they've had Nazem Kadri playing with Phil Kessel, so that's expected. We'll talk to Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post about that. I want to talk a little bit, I thought it was fascinating, about Wade Redden. Claude Julien decided not to go with Dougie Hamilton, the rookie defenseman who played top 4 minutes at certain points. Jets fans would remember seeing Dougie Hamilton, but in fact he decided to go with Wade Redden, who last year was in the AHL, and remember he was bought out, and then he ended up on the Blues and then the Bruins. Reem, how impressive was it Wade Redden picked up a goal, got an assist on Nathan Horton's goal? I mean, for a guy like him to be such an impact in that game, I mean, you could argue he was the first star in that game for Boston.
Well, I think the thing about Wade Redden you have to acknowledge is he wasn't in the AHL because he wasn't an NHL player. He's right. definitely an NHL player, but just that his contract didn't justify the output that he was providing. And sometimes, you know, you want to take the money off the books, and you have someone who can provide, you know, the same level of performance for less money. That being said, Wade Redden went to St. Louis, didn't really work out from there. They're very deep on defense, but he went to Boston, and he's found a home. He's doing what he can do. I mean, he's got the playoff experience, and we saw, you know, Boston, their team, it's pretty much a very similar core that we saw that won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. Toronto's team, you know, they think they got about 10 players who've never even played in the playoffs, and that's what they're trying to do with Dougie Hamilton. You can't just throw a guy right into the fire, into playoff hockey. It's, as we've seen, it's a completely different game than the regular season. Now, Claude Julien, he's a smart coach. He wants to ease him in and, you know, let him see, hey, this is what you need to do in the playoffs. And all reports indicate that I believe Dougie Hamilton will be in the lineup tonight.
That's a good point, Reem. They're deciding to go back with Dougie Hamilton, which is, you know, probably something that he's going to be motivated by, knowing that Wade Redden took his place and, you know, he has something to prove there. We should mention that right now we have a hockey game going on.
Yes.
In Washington, the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers are tied. Right now, there's no score. There's about 9 minutes left in the second period for all of you who are out and about, possibly at Shaw Park, listening in on your Discman or your Walkman or your iPod. So there's no score.
Are we in Hot Tub Time Machine right now? What's going
we
on?
We might be. We're in Shaw Park Time Machine, Dave. So Washington and New York are tied up. We've got three other games happening. Of course, Boston and Toronto, what we're talking about a little bit later. I want to now talk a little bit, go a little bit more towards Tuukka Rask. Now, Tim Thomas was the Conn Smythe winner when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup. That's a good point, Reem. Tuukka Rask, I think, is probably my Vezina winner this year, and he has played pretty well. And you could argue, okay, the shots were 40-20. You know, he didn't have to stand on his head. Do you think, Dave, Tuukka Rask has it in him to go all the way and give a Tim Thomas-like performance?
I think so. I honestly do. I think, like, he's just a solid, solid goaltender. He's not the flash. He's not the big name. It's funny how, even though Boston is a big market, Tuukka Rask doesn't get the recognition around the league that,
I agree.
You know, that so many other guys do, that so many other guys who are in, you know, similarly sized markets, but for whatever reason, they just get a lot more respect. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that Tuukka Rask is the Rodney Dangerfield of the NHL and he can't get no respect. But it's just that...
Well, Dave, you're the Rodney Dangerfield of TSN 1290, though.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ez. But you know what? I think what it ultimately comes down to is there's no question that Tuukka Rask can take Boston deep into the playoffs.
I would have to agree. I mean, Tim Thomas, you have to admit, he was spectacular taking the Bruins to the Cup. He was the Conn Smythe. But whatever happened, things went sour with him. And I think Tuukka Rask is the right guy to replace him. He's shown that he has the potential to be a great goalie in the National League. And the bottom line is, the Boston Bruins are one of the premier teams in the National Hockey League, and they have a great defense in front of them. And when you have that kind of defense, they limit the quality chances in front, and he just has to make those easy saves, and I think he can do it.
And they were a loss away from being the second seed in the Eastern Conference. So this might be one of the best four seeds there has ever been in the Eastern Conference. I mean, the Boston Bruins were there all year with the Pittsburgh Penguins and ended up finishing, what, 1 point out of second. So you could say that this is the 4-5 matchup, but really, I think we know that the Boston Bruins are better than right. the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference. I think a lot of us have them going to the Eastern Conference Finals, probably be against the Pittsburgh Penguins, who we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. Let's go to break right now. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live from Shaw Park. It's the Winnipeg Gold Eyes annual open house. It's almost 1 o'clock. Shaw Park is going to be open here till 2 o'clock p.m., so come on down. Winnipeg Gold Eyes are taking a little batting practice right now, so come on down. The first 1,500, I think there's a few hot dogs, a few drinks left.
My
first
big
1,500 people get a drink and a hot dog. Remus has had a couple hot dogs, so there might be two less hot dogs. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post is going to come on, and he's going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins, Game 2 tonight at 6 o'clock p.m. So let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from Shaw Park on TSN 1290. Welcome back to Shaw Park. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is a special edition. We've got beautiful weather out. We've got the Winnipeg Gold Eyes taking a little batting practice. This is the Gold Eyes annual open house. We will be here on air till 3 o'clock p.m. The Gold Eyes open house goes till 2 o'clock, so come on down, get a drink, get a hot dog, get a hamburger, maybe get some Robin's donuts. Lots of good stuff. I'm Ezra Ginsberg of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm joined by Dave Minuk and Michael Remus, filling in for Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock, who are in Toronto, probably sipping a martini on a patio in downtown Toronto.
I think Richard's actually the Jays game, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, all right. He's at a Jays
game. Can't be here at Shaw Park.
But he's enjoying some baseball.
Okay, so it might be an all-baseball Legal Curve event in Winnipeg and Toronto. Right now, we're going to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline, and we are going to be joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, he covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Do they still serve those donuts down the third baseline at Shaw Park?
Yes, absolutely, and they're amazing. They can't believe how many they give you for that small bag. It's $3. It's great.
Sean,
if I email you guys a couple bucks through Interact, can you send a couple out to Toronto for me?
We will.
I appreciate that.
In fact, we'll actually get Michael to fly to Toronto with the donuts, and he'll hand deliver them to you.
That'd be good. They better still be warm, though.
we'll find a microwave at Pearson International Airport.
Those donuts are one of my absolutely favorite parts of Winnipeg in the summer. Fantastic.
We'll make sure we take care of you, Sean. Let's
right,
talk about
you.
The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins took Game 1 on Wednesday night. The Toronto Maple Leafs have had a couple of days off to get things in order, make some changes. First and foremost, we have to ask you, we're starting off each interview today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by talking about suspensions. What did you think of the one-game suspension given to Andrew Ferentz for his hit to the head on Michael Grabowski?
It seemed like it had a more of a malicious sort of background than what Griba had on Lars Eller. I mean, you know, you can look at the Ottawa-Montreal hit and think, well, that's a hockey hit. It's a suicide pass. He was, you know, didn't leave his feet, didn't use his elbow, shoulder. He gets two games. You have Andrew Ferentz coming around. He sees Grabowski face on, raises his elbow, and drives it into the guy's face. He gets one game. So, I mean, maybe in terms of the wheel of justice, I've lost the plot line a little bit, but that one does seem, I don't know, a little bit light. I think if, you know, maybe Grabowski goes down with a broken nose or can't return to play, maybe Ferentz gets, you know, two or three games.
So now the question really in Game 2, Sean, is can Toronto's defense handle Boston's big, skilled forwards?
I don't know if it's the big, skilled forwards. I mean, Toronto's been outshot, you know, they've been outshot a lot by the Bruins. Like even the one game where they beat Boston this year, Toronto was outshot 33-13, but that doesn't put Boston into unique company. The Leafs have been outshot by just about everybody they've played this year, and sometimes by a lot. So I don't know if it's necessarily the big forwards that the Bruins have as much as the defense. That, you know, they did a really good job. And that blue line has, I think, 5 holdovers from Boston's Stanley Cup win. They did a really good job of making Phil Kessel disappear, of making Nazem Kadri disappear, and minimizing a lot of Toronto's speed and talent up front.
There's been much ado made about Phil Kessel. You know, before the start of the series, he didn't speak to the media. He hasn't played well against the Bruins all season. Do the Leafs have any chance of winning this series without him contributing offensively?
Yeah, they do. You can mix and match, you know, if you're Randy Carlyle, and try and get Phil Kessel away from Zdeno Chara. But, I mean, in Boston, with the line changes in the last line, that's not going to really work, I don't think. But I think that the Leafs this year, if there is a silver lining for Leafs fans to look at, it's that they do have more scoring depth, you know, beyond just the first line. That if you can get, say, Nazem Kadri working together with Joffrey Lupul, that those two can provide pretty good secondary scoring and take a lot of pressure off Phil Kessel until he can find his way against a team that has just basically dominated him since they traded him to Toronto.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and Boston Bruins. They play at 6 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live at Shaw Park. Sean, we've heard that there might be as many as 5 new faces in the lineup for the Toronto Maple Leafs. What changes should we expect in the lineup tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, Matt Koskinen, the defenseman, has a broken finger. He's called it heartbreaking. So he'll almost certainly be out. I think that some of the biggest changes you might notice would be along the blue line. You know, Jake Gardner, he's the fast puck-moving defenseman who's, you know, basically found himself in Randy Carlyle's doghouse for most of the season. He sat the last four regular season games. He could come in, but almost more likely, I think, is that Ryan O'Byrne, who has picked up the trade deadline from Colorado, he should draw in. You know, maybe that means that Lyles is out, and O'Byrne and Gardner are both in, Lyles being John Michael Lyles. So those are the two changes you can see. And the other question, as always with the Leafs, is about their face hunters, the two enforcers, Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren. I suspect Matt Staton will almost certainly draw in for one of the two. I find it hard to believe that, you know, Randy Carlyle will abandon both of his face punchers, that one of them will make it in. And my guess is that it's probably Colton Orr who plays.
So now that we've talked about all the lineup changes, we talk about we have to move to the concept of Randy Carlyle and his love matching lines. How do you think he's going to change the game plan to match the Lucic, Krejci, and Horton line, which was so successful for the Bruins in Game 1?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the thing is who do you rotate through? I mean, what changes can you make because you were dominated so thoroughly? There wasn't a facet of the game in which they actually did very well. You know, they had their two goons out there, excuse me, enforcers. They had their two enforcers out there with Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren just begging, daring them to fight because the Leafs led the league in fighting, and not by a little bit. But they didn't do that. The Bruins weren't going to have it, so you had to play hockey. And there wasn't a facet of the game in which the Leafs weren't badly outplayed. So it's not just, you know, one line against this. It's not just, you know, the Kessel against Chara matchup. It's that they had almost a complete system failure. And you know, having to turn that around against a team that's just, it's really dominated them for the last 3 to 5 years, it's not going to be a short order.
The Bruins completely did dominate the Leafs on Wednesday. And, you know, we've talked to the Leafs. A lot of them attributed that to their lack of playoff experience. They weren't ready for the playoff game. Do you see that being a factor for the rest of the series?
No, I don't know if it's the experience. It's just the fact that Boston's a pretty good hockey team, and it's able to readily exploit the weaknesses that Toronto has. I mean, Toronto has this problem of, you know, and this is going to sound oversimplified, but they give up a lot more chances than they generate. They're not a very good puck possession team this year. And when you're not a good puck possession team, that means, by definition, that the other team has the puck more than you, that they're going to generate more shots, more time in your offensive zone. And, you know, even if the shots are from the perimeter, which is something you hear a lot around the Leafs, is that, well, you know, we're not allowing shots from in close. Well, you know, shots from far away can still hit a stick or a leg and bounce in, especially in the playoffs, and those are killers. And that's an issue that I don't know if it can be addressed in this short period of time where, you know, Boston's just going to keep coming in waves and waves across the Toronto blue line.
Sean, you mentioned the shot differential, and, you know, you mentioned the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't play very well, and it's going to be difficult to match lines. As far as James Reimer goes, he faced 40 shots, and sure, you could argue that especially the Johnny Boychuk goal wasn't his best work, but is this more than just James Reimer? Is it really the way that the Toronto Maple Leafs are simply overmatched in this series against the Bruins?
Oh, absolutely. It's more than James Reimer. I mean, there was a second goal where I can't remember who scored it now because it was a couple of days ago, but Mike Koskinen went down in front, sort of tried to block and then bailed at the last minute. And I still think he might have got a piece of it. And that, you know, may or may not have deflected, but certainly screened Reimer. So that's two goals. I think that he's relatively blameless for. But yeah, it's the same thing. It's, you know, you have the Bruins crashing the net. You have a lot of activity. You have a lot of work for James Reimer, who I thought, you know, all things considered, certainly wasn't the biggest sort of sore point in that loss the other night.
Sean, final question here. Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs play tonight, game two after the two-day break. How do the Toronto Maple Leafs get back in this series? Obviously, they have to score more goals. They're going to have to do a better job of shutting down Boston. But how do they get back into the series tonight? And how do they eventually win the series if they're able to get back in it?
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to eventually win the series. I picked the Bruins in six before. I think Boston matches up too well against Toronto. That, you know, Toronto has good pieces to build for the future, but this isn't the team that's going to win the Stanley Cup or challenge for the Stanley Cup. They still have, you know, depth issues on the blue line where they have, you know, one or two legitimate top four defensemen on this team as it stands. They have potential, but still, it's going to take a little bit of time. In terms of, you know, winning a game or two or, you know, maybe pushing the series a little bit further, they're going to have to work on their breakouts. They can't keep turning the puck over in the neutral zone. Maybe shorter, quicker passes to get past that Boston forecheck and sort of just hold on to the puck a little bit more and generate more offense by using your skill guys who hold on to the puck and, you know, generate a little bit more pressure on Tuukka Rask and the Boston defense.
Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, you've been on the Illegal Curve multiple show, Illegal Curve show multiple times. We thank you for joining us today. Have a great day and enjoy tonight's game.
I'll be waiting for those donuts. Thanks a lot, fellas.
And we will send you those donuts.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks a lot, Sean. We're going to go to break right now. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes annual house, which goes till 2. We're going to be live till 3. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Gold Eyes, is going to join us a little bit later. We're going to talk more about the Eastern Conference. Later on in the show, we're going to go to the Western Conference. We're going to be joined by Randy Hahn, who's going to talk about the San Jose Sharks, who are up 2-0 on the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live from Shaw Park on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Minuk and Michael Remus. We're talking hockey. We just had Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post talking Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Boston Bruins. Now we're going to go to the Pittsburgh Penguins versus the New York Islanders. We should mention as well, we're going to talk about this series next segment, but the New York Rangers and Washington Capitals are currently tied at no score after 2 periods. The Rangers are trying to get back into the series against the Washington Capitals.
If you guys want to have your comments about the playoffs read, you know, tweet us at Illegal Curve. We are always happy to get some tweets from our from our listeners
let's,
and our readers.
Read the best ones.
Yeah, we'll read the best ones. Drew's not here. Drew doesn't like to read tweets so much, but the Remus, Ezzy, and I have no problem. So make sure you tweet us at Illegal Curve with your thoughts on the playoff series, either as we're talking about them or, you know, the ones that we'll be talking about in a few segments from now.
Yeah, who do you like? Who do you think's going to win going forward? What do you think of the suspension so far?
Absolutely.
Best comments. We'll give them a read.
Absolutely. Why not?
Maybe we'll even give them a free hot dog. We've got a couple free hot dogs in front of us. It's tough for us to eat them because we're on air. So
I had one during the break.
Remus is like a chipmunk. He's actually got one sitting in a pouch in his mouth.
Yeah, somehow Remus is able to eat hot dogs in under 10 seconds. It's quite amazing.
I loaded up with mustard. You know, the one thing I've started to think is maybe I don't actually like hot dogs.
I just like mustard.
I just like mustard because I load these things up. You can't even see the hot dog. They're covered in mustard.
Reem, you should just like take spoonfuls of mustard and just skip the hot dog.
I can't eat mustard plain, but it goes good on anything.
Okay.
Maybe not anything fine, but, you know, mustard on a corned beef sandwich, on a hot dog, on a hamburger.
On a cookie?
I don't know. Honey mustard is good dip, though. Honey mustard and pita chips?
All right, as Reem is back in.
Reem, we'll get you a few more hot dogs here. I'm sure that they'll cook up a few after we're done here. We're live at Shaw Park. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Winnipeg Gold Eyes annual open house goes till 2. We're going to be on the air till 3. We've still got Randy Hahn of CSN Bay Area coming up at 2 o'clock p.m. We're going to talk about the San Jose Sharks, the Vancouver Canucks. We're going to talk more about the Western Conference. Now let's go to Pittsburgh and the Islanders. The Islanders upset the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday 4-3. We were all watching the game. Kyle Okposo took the shot, and Marc-Andre Fleury put in his own net. You know, it was a shocker, and everyone after that first 5-0 game in Game 1 thought the Pittsburgh Penguins were well on their way to sweeping the New York Islanders. Dave, are you concerned at all here that the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't going to win this series? Or do you think maybe the New York Islanders have got a little bit inside of the Pittsburgh Penguins' heads?
I would suggest that it's a little bit of everything, but mostly people need to chill. It's the playoffs. They go long. Teams aren't there by accident. I mean, sure, sometimes these teams... You look, Sean Fitzgerald said it best. He doesn't expect the Leafs to win, but you can expect the Leafs to at least give them a show. The Islanders are a good young team. They're a fast team. They have some excellent scorers. The Islanders were not going to just roll over and die because the Pittsburgh Penguins are the Pittsburgh Penguins and look like an all-star team. So, I mean, like, am I surprised that the Islanders had a good showing? No, not really, because I thought that the Islanders are a pretty good team. They've always, I mean, not that the Jets are the Penguins, but they were always came into this build, into the MTS Center. They always played the Jets tough. They've got a very nice young, that Travis Hamonic, Winnipeg boy, is just an amazing player.
Like St. Malo, but...
Well, close. You know what I meant. Sorry, I think Manitoba, I think I get a little bit Winnipeg-centric.
I'm here to make you look good, by the way, even though I really don't need to.
But the point is that the Islanders are not going to take it from the Penguins. They're not going to knock the Penguins off. I mean, they could, I guess, conceivably, but I don't think they will. You know, they got lucky. The boards in Pittsburgh were extraordinarily live yesterday. I mean, like, both those goals, there was the Okposo goal and then Matt Martin's goal. Both were basically shots off the backboard that went, you know, great bounces and went right in front of the net. So, you know, I mean, there's an element of luck to it. You know, I also, part of it also is the Crosby factor. I mean, you saw Sidney Crosby back in the game, his first game back in ages. I think, what was that, like 15 games or something like that since he's last played. You know, he got the first two goals early. You thought to yourself, oh, well, Crosby's just going to dominate. What did you say as we're watching the game? Like, you thought we were going to, at minimum, was going to be a hat trick.
It looked like it was a foregone conclusion yesterday.
Yeah, it was the Crosby
Sidney
show.
Crosby was going to get
right.
a hat trick.
So you're sitting there and you're anticipating that Crosby's just going to dominate the way Crosby dominates. But the truth is, you know, Crosby was a little tentative. Crosby wasn't dominating the game. He wasn't playing as dirty as he had been. So, you know, as good, as efficient, as effective as he could have been. So, you know, it was an interesting game. I think the Penguins were getting used to it. Malkin looked like a beast at points. Like, he was just so strong. But
and many people, you know, first and foremost, we're going to bring in Paul Edmonds right now, voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes. He's running around here, and we're lucky to have him back on. We're going to talk to Paul right now and continue the conversation about the New York Islanders and the Pittsburgh Penguins. But you mentioned Malkin, and he's a guy that has also had injury problems this year. He had the concussion, of course, and he is a guy that, it's funny you mentioned that, because I think he wasn't as much of a factor as I was expecting him to be in the first two games. He hasn't necessarily played poorly, but, you know, the first game was a little bit of a wipeout. But Paul, I want to bring you in here right now. We're talking about the Penguins and Islanders, and Sidney Crosby got the two goals in the first game. What do you think? I mean, are the New York Islanders going to have the biggest upset here, or is this just one game where they got a couple of lucky goals on Marc-Andre Fleury?
Well, I don't know, after two games in the series be tied at one, that we can start looking toward upset, but I think that throughout the course of the season, we saw the Islanders taking some steps to respectability again. You know, they're going to go into a new building. They've got some good young players. They've let... You know, interesting model. John Tavares brought in, you know, right out of junior, and that's the thing that the Jets didn't want to do here with either of their two guys, right, Scheifele or True. But they want to let them continue their junior or NCAA careers. Next year they're going to have an opportunity to have a look at them again in camp. But Jonathan Tavares jumped right out of major junior and went right into the Islanders, okay? So now all of a sudden he's got his feet under him for a few years. He's got some players that can play with him as well.
A Hart Trophy candidate.
Yeah, Mark Strait is another guy. And so, you know, all of a sudden this team is not, I don't think, come out of nowhere, but they've just developed and matured a little bit to the point where they can hang with some of these teams. They're going to, like I said, go into a new building. Maybe if they had a new owner, it might be a lot better there too as well. But there's some respectability factor, and I think that they showed that yesterday. Interesting for me how the Pittsburgh Penguins score five goals in their first game without Crosby. They get him back. He scores the first two goals of the game, and yet they end up losing the game. So is it still Pittsburgh's series to win? Absolutely, in my opinion. But it will be interesting to see if the Islanders can knock on the door to take it to six or seven games. That will be what will intrigue me.
As you mentioned, it's too early to really make too many sweeping conclusions about who has the momentum in the series. The series is going back to New York, Long Island, Nassau Coliseum. I want to throw it to you guys right now, though, about Marc-Andre Fleury, because Marc-Andre Fleury didn't play very well last year in the first round against the Philadelphia Flyers. And with those lively boards, I mean, you can blame the boards all you want, but, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury at the end of the day has to be responsible for it. So I want to throw it to you guys right now. Marc-Andre Fleury, is he having some problems right now? And is maybe at this point, do you throw in a guy like Thomas Vokoun, or is that completely ridiculous?
I think it's ridiculous. I think that Marc-Andre Fleury is your goalie if you're going to win. Thomas Vokoun is if the wheels completely fall off this, then you have Thomas Vokoun. You know, a veteran guy, he's steady, he can provide some leadership, but you have to know that Marc-Andre Fleury has won the Stanley Cup for you before.
Yes.
It's not like this guy's never done this before and he's untested. He's won the Stanley Cup, so I think, like, again, it's like any of these guys. They're entitled to have one bad game. He didn't do the reads. The reality is, let's be realistic, Marc-Andre Fleury plays, you know, in Pittsburgh more than anybody. So if anybody should know the backboards, it's Marc-Andre Fleury. So he should have maybe a little bit better of net presence yesterday. But I really think, like, as much of as that team is an all-star, and let's be realistic, that team is an all-star team. You know, when you look at it, Ginla and Malkin and Crosby and Morrow and Letang, and, like, the names go on and on and on. But there really was, like, almost like a getting back to know you sort of feel about the game yesterday with Crosby. Sure, he got two goals, but like it just felt like they were kind of getting recommitted to each other. And I really think, like, you know, let's be realistic. After, by game three, this team will be ready. They'll be prepared. And I think it'll be a totally different team.
I think you're right. Reem, I want to ask you a question here. And Paul, after Reem answers, you can possibly jump in here. The Pittsburgh Penguins defense, this isn't the same defense that they had in 2009. A guy that we've talked about a lot, you know, on the Pittsburgh Penguins, that's not necessarily a guy that you are that comfortable with on your back end is Derek Englund. I think he was beaten a little bit last year. Do you think maybe in addition to, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins getting a little bit of a bad puck luck and bad, you know, bounces off the boards, do you think maybe the Islanders are taking advantage of a Pittsburgh Penguins defense that maybe isn't as strong as it used to be?
Look, I think in the first game, the Islanders were a lot like we saw with the Leafs. I mean, they're a young team, inexperienced. They hadn't been to the playoffs. Maybe took them a game or so to get adjusted to the play. The next game, Islanders come out. They give the Penguins a run for the money. Yeah, we have seen last year the Penguins' defense isn't what it was. They don't have a guy, you know, a big guy like Hal Gill who was instrumental. They don't
and
have,
that's why they brought in Douglas Murray.
And they don't have Rob Scuderi, who was, you know, instrumental for the Kings Stanley Cup last year. So I think that the Islanders, I think, you know, the thing with the playoffs is there's constant adjusting and readjusting. And we saw last year the Islanders came back. And now I think this game, I think the Penguins say, hey, these guys, this isn't going to be a walk in the park. We got to, you know, we still have to put in, you know, A plus, 110%, 200-foot game.
North-south.
Play north-south, not east-west. All that cliche stuff. But I think that this is still the Penguins series to win, and I think that, you know what, they'll be fine.
Let me get some of those down again. That was that east-west, 200 feet, yeah, 110. Yeah,
the cliche handbook.
Man,
listen, if nothing else, Pittsburgh had a bit of a wake-up call.
Yes, okay? Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. And sometimes you need that. How many times in the game of hockey have we talked about whether it's at the MJHL level, Western Hockey League level, AHL when we had the Moose here, or now the NHL that we've been following since we were all kids. Sometimes those Stanley Cup champions in the first round have the toughest time because they're playing a much lower seed
that's
got nothing to lose, a.k.a. the Islanders here. Okay, they're playing pretty loose, and they're trying to play for each other, and all of a sudden they give that team the wake-up call and what will usually propel a team like Pittsburgh maybe on to a Stanley Cup championship. If they can get past a difficult Islanders team in that first round, they'll come back and tell you that was the most difficult series we had, and as a result, we woke up from that one, and we really kind of came together. That's what I think you might see out of Pittsburgh here, unless there is an upset, but I don't see that happening.
I agree with you. We're joined by Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, on TSN 1290. We are at Shaw Park. This is the annual 20th anniversary edition of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Open house at Shaw Park. Goes till 2 o'clock. We're going to be here till 3. If you're in the neighborhood, come on down. You've still got time to come to Shaw Park. Remus has left a couple of hot dogs for everybody. Goldie is here. Goldette is here. The Winnipeg Gold Eyes are still on the field right now. They were taking batting practice, but they are still on the field. You can still come down, meet Paul Edmonds, meet everybody here. Come say hi to the Legal Curve guys. I don't know why they'd want to say hi to us, but we're joined by Paul Edmonds. We're talking Pittsburgh Islanders, and I think that this series right now is probably maybe the most unexpected series because of the fact that the Islanders have decided to kind of make a series of it, really, and no one expected it. But I think this is going to be interesting going forward. I know we were talking about, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury and Sidney Crosby and all that, but I do think at the end of the day, like you said, Paul, it is going to be a question of this all-star team that was compiled, and it really is an all-star team, is probably going to, in Game 3, go into New York, take care of business, and probably this one will, I think, is going to be over in no more than 6.
Although, I would say that if you're watching that series, and we all get into situations in life where you can't be in front of the TV the whole time, but
I try really hard.
Okay, all right. wait till you get married and have kids, because it changes completely.
I'll ask Drew about that.
Yeah, it changes completely. Plus, when baseball's going on, this is my favorite time of year, right?
Yep.
I go from both. I have the NHL package, and I have the MLB package, so there's a lot of...
So does this guy.
Yes, and it's pretty
Remus
awesome.
Has it.
I can spend a lot of time in front of the TV. But I'll say this about that series sort of in closing. I think the Islanders are a bit of a sexy pick right now because
Absolutely.
Not a lot of people knew about them. They've been so bad for so many years that all of a sudden, I think Dennis Potvin said it appropriately, it's fun to watch the Islanders
Absolutely.
Again. So enough said.
Yeah.
They are a team that I think when we saw them twice here at the MTS Center, both games went to shootout, overtime and a shootout, and they played really well, and they weren't just a one-line team, even though John Tavares is obviously one of the best players in the league. But we're going to go to break right now. Paul, thanks for coming on. You're going to come back in the last hour.
Yep.
We are at Shaw Park right now for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. It goes till 2 o'clock. You've still got time to come down here. You can get tickets. Come on down. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back. And we're actually going to now talk about one more series, the Capitals and the Rangers. Then we'll go to the Western Conference and talk about the four series in the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.